we are reading from the King James. A wise son heareth his father's instruction, but a scorner heareth not rebuke. A man shall eat good by the fruit of his mouth, but the soul of the transgressor shall eat violence. He that keepeth his mouth, he openeth wide his lips, shall have destruction. The soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. A righteous man hateth lying, but a wicked man is loathsome and cometh to shame. Righteousness keepeth him that is upright in the way, but with sinner. There is that maketh himself rich, yet hath nothing. There is that maketh himself poor, yet hath great riches. The ransom of a man's life are his riches, but the poor heareth not rebuke. The light of the righteous rejoiceth, but the lamp of the wicked shall be put out. O attention, but with the well advised is wisdom. Wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished, but he that gathereth by labor shall increase. Hope deferred maketh the heart sick, but when the desire cometh, it is a tree of life. Whoso despiseth the word shall be destroyed, but he that feareth the commandment. The law of the wise is a fountain of life to depart from the snares of death. Good understanding giveth favor, but the way of transgressors is hard. Every prudent man dealeth with knowledge, but a fool layeth open his folly. A wicked messenger falleth into mischief, but a faithful ambassador is health. To him that refuseth instruction, but he that regardeth reproof shall be honored. The desire accomplished is sweet to the soul, but it is abomination to fools to depart from evil. He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Evil pursueth sinners, but to the righteous good shall be. A good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children, and the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. Much food is in the tillage of the poor, but there is that is destroyed for want of judgment. He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. The man of his soul, but the belly of the wicked shall want. I want to tell you that I think to read that out loud took something like 2 or 3 minutes. And we sometimes think we haven't time to read a chapter of the Bible. I want to just point out 2 points. I think it's very encouraging to know that it only takes such a short time. And so that being 31 chapters in the book, I strongly recommend for those who are not doing it that you take one chapter a day and, like Billy Graham, start the day with a chapter of Proverbs. That's his early morning reading. Is one chapter. 2, if you can find a place in your house where you can read that alone, where you can read it out loud alone without being an unpleasant alarm clock to the sleeping members yet in your household, it would be good. There's something about hearing the word, even hearing your voice saying it, even when we're praying. And just this last week, my husband had a real breakthrough of a blessing in prayer. And it was a prayer that he had been praying over the last number of weeks while he's been going through a totally different type of shattering blows. And I said, what made the difference, Doug? Because we prayed together and you've been praying and and he's walked and prayed. He said, do you know what I did? I was in the library here, and I just decided to speak it out. And I spoke out my confession of faith. I spoke out my praise to the Lord. And there's no secret in that particular. I'm not saying there's a technique here. It's just that strong will of saying, I will worship the Lord. I will praise the Lord. I will hear his word, and I will walk in his word. The key to chapter 13, I think, is for us, at least this morning, is verse 15. And so I would add that to your list of memory verses. A good understanding giveth favor, but the way of transgressors is hard. And the good understanding that gives us favor is the understanding of the Lord. It is the way of the Lord. It is the God's way versus man's way. So I would title our meditation this morning as something like this: the way of the righteous against the way of the wicked. And you might like to make two columns with a little space in the middle, and we're going to wrap up our meditation with some key thoughts right down the center there. But on the left side, the way of the righteous. On the right, the way of the wicked. What are the righteous? Well, making it very simple, I've reflected on this and just come up with something so simple. It's just the way of right living. Of course, another way of saying it, it's God's way. And then, what is the way of the wicked? Well, that's man's way. Or you can say it's the way of wrongdoing. The way of wrongdoing. I think sometimes when we read in the Bible, the righteous this and Proverbs the righteous that, we are of two minds. We're either so self-righteous, we think, that's me, and we check it up, that's a blessing for me, that's me. Or we are on the other side of feeling, I'm not righteous, I'm just so bad, I'm so wicked, never will apply to me, never will apply to me. Both are wrong. Both are wrong. We are not righteous in our own selves, and nor are we hopeless cases, because we're God's cases. And we're righteous because we are clothed in his righteousness. I have to keep remembering that and reminding you that I can claim all that goes for the righteous because it is in God's righteousness that I stand and not in my own. I forget it like you do, but we need to remind one another. That's why we meet together. We're told, forsake not the getting of yourselves together, the gathering of yourselves together. Why? So that you might encourage one another. And sometimes we think, oh, we didn't see a vision. We didn't even have a miracle today. Well, I don't know what the Lord is always doing. Sometimes we hear many months after a meeting what happened, and we never knew at the time. God's business, what he does. If he declares it, we rejoice. But if he doesn't, we are faithful to meet together, because always, when we meet together, we are encouraged. We are encouraged with one another's faith and what we hear. I have been all week long, and but even this morning talking to my husband, the blessing of that song that was sung last Tuesday morning. I just saw in a new light the mercy of the Lord for his wayward people. God spoke to one who was willing to be obedient to sing his word in the spirit. So we never know what's feeding one another, what is God's a blessing to us. So we are not righteous except in God. But then we read about the wicked and the way of the wicked. And I look at that, I often think to myself, that's not me, because I'm not in jail. I haven't broken the law, and so on. My, how quickly we can break the law. How quickly we can break the law. We're going along the traffic the other day, and we just missed a way. And so we decided to make a U-turn. I'm saying we. It was the two of us in the car. And then we spied a policeman. And do you know what? We would have completed the U-turn, but because man's eyes were upon us, we made a big detour around. And I thought, what deceitful lawbreakers. We are, yet we go into the prison to help straighten them out. So we are wrongdoers, aren't we? All right. Now, verses 1 and 2, what are some of these right ways? I have 8 that I came to as I went through this study. And the first one is found in verse 1. And verse 10 together. As you notice, the verses don't have any consecutive thought. They're sort of independent thoughts. So I would put verses 1, verse 10, under hearing. It's how we hear we demonstrate whether we are on the side walking the way of the righteous or walking the way of the wicked. Notice it says in verse 1, a wise son heareth his father's instruction, and but a scorner heareth not rebuke. Now, that hearing is not referring to just simply hearing with the ear. It's an attitude of hearing. It's a heart hearing. It's hearing with the intention to live in the wisdom that is given. So the first thing is our way of hearing. And by comparison, the stubborn person, the unrighteous person, man's way, wrongdoer, his attitude is his, I will go my own way. And because his heart is stubborn and stony, he is stone deaf. He doesn't hear. Even if the words are registered in his ear apparatus physically, he does not get it because he is stone deaf, and that comes from his stony, stubborn heart. Verse 10 brings out, only by pride cometh contention, but with the well-advised is wisdom. Now, the well-advised are those who take advice, those who are willing to listen, to take advice. This aspect is doing. Doing what we hear, being ready to act in it. By contrast, the way of the wicked is a closed mind. I don't need advice. I won't go to anyone for advice, or I'll go running around everywhere till I hear the right thing just to confirm my own mind. Those are 2 or 3 different ways we see all around us of attitudes. When it says only by pride cometh contention, I just want to mention one little interesting point, and it might be a deterrent the next time we're ready to quarrel. Perhaps you don't quarrel in your family, but we do. And it's very obvious to see it, especially among the children. But once in a while, I find myself in a hassle, too, with them. Pride is the ingredient of every quarrel, but not of every difference of opinion. It's when we are competitive or unyielding in our personality that we have the quarreling, the contention. So, and what is it? It's pride. I want my opinion. I want my way. I want to be right. Whatever. So when we are in the midst of a quarrel, next time perhaps God will bring this bit of truth that's just hidden in that one verse even, saying, watch it, you think you're just having a difference of opinion. This argument is rooted in pride, not in a difference of opinion. The deep root of it is pride. The surface manifestation happens to look like an intelligent argument. All right, that's hearing. Now, in verse 2 and 3, we have speaking. It says, a man shall eat good by the fruit of his mouth, but the soul of the transgressors shall eat violence. And he that keepeth his mouth keepeth his life, but he that openeth wide his lips shall have destruction. So that the way of the righteous is to have a guard on our speaking, and the way of the wicked is gab. Opening wide your mouth. What are some of the ways in which we open wide our mouth? Do you just like to mention any?
Gossiping.
Gossiping, right?
Grumbling.
Grumbling and anger.
Nagging.
If you'd like to enlarge on any of it, you're welcome to. One way we open wide our mouth is making a quick promise. I used to do that. Oh, we'll have you over for dinner. I've now discovered that that date never comes. And therefore, I'd be careful that I don't say, we will have you over for dinner if you don't intend to have them over for dinner. It says in Psalm 15, who will abide in the tabernacle of the Most High? He that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not. In other words, if you make a promise and it really hurts you to keep it, that you still do not change your mind, you keep it, even if it hurts. So keeping promises, and I think this is something especially for our teenagers and young people, I think that generation is peculiarly lacking with a sense of being faithful to a commitment or to a promise. If it just doesn't suit, we just don't do it attitude. Another way of opening wide our mouth is totally unnecessary. Well, it's probably like gossip, just disclosures, you know, just a little bit of added information, disclosing that which says, if you're loving, you'll conceal a matter. But he that reveals a wrong separates even very best friends. I think another way of the open mouth person is the person you just meet and pours out a lot of flattery. A flattery which doesn't have any roots, any basis. Flattery is a false kindness, false appreciation. It isn't real, it's not insincere. Saying nice things and buttering up, but it doesn't have genuine facts behind it, nor even genuine feelings. Flattery is something that is just surface and not deep. Job is just before Psalms, and you might just quickly like to look up. So Job 32, 21 and 22. There was Eliphaz and Bildad and Zophar, who were three friends known as Job's comforters. And they had a lot of really quite interesting and rather good things to say, but they were saying them from the wrong motive. They were analyzing what God was doing. As a matter of fact, I think we're all Job's comforters by nature. Just like Bill said this morning, people were saying, what's God saying? What's God doing in your life? And these comforters came and tried to analyze Job's situation. And as I said, little taken out of context, things they said might have been right, but it was the attitude and so on that they were saying that was wrong. And then came Elihu, the fourth friend, and it says he was angry because he was angry at the friends who had been talking to Job all along and who never hadn't found the correct answer, and then he was angry at Job, who was forever being defensive against these friends. And that's what we do to a person who's going through deep trouble and trial and testing, and to have people coming along, what is wrong? What is what is needs correcting in your life? What is God saying in you, to you, and so on? Immediately makes one defensive if God hasn't spoken, and you spend your time responding to these pointed fingers instead of asking the Lord what he is saying, giving him the freedom. And I have found myself that when God has his timing to reveal all his purposes, he doesn't shout his secrets always in one swoop at the beginning of a thing. He prepares the ground. We were at a little garden affair on Sunday afternoon getting ready for our, what are they called? Not victory gardens, but anyway, vegetable gardens. They have a special name, inflation and so on. And we were told how you take that mulch and it has to be put into the ground in order to soften, to loosen rather, the soil, so that when the little seed goes in, it won't be sort of snuffed out with it with the tight ground, which otherwise gets so hard and then cracks and so on. And God has a way of, he has to prepare that ground. How beautifully we're seeing it in our dear brother Bill. It's a sort of loosening of all that tightness and kind of a relaxing in the Lord and a giving some space to him to, as it were, to plant a little seed, so that it will then take root and grow. So here we have in Job 32, 21, 22, let me not, says Elihu, says, your self-righteousness, Job, now I have a word of wisdom from the Lord. And Elihu was not rebuked at the end of the book, like the three comforters. So he had a real word from the Lord. But among his many things, which is not what we're studying today, is just this one little point. Let me not, I pray you, accept any man's person, neither let me give flattering titles unto man, for I know not to give flattering titles. In so doing, my Maker would soon take me away. And I think it's important I listen to Elihu, because Elihu was the one whom God used to somehow shape Job to really see that his self-righteousness wasn't going to even hold, and that none of us are righteous before God, and that flattery was something he was so cautious against. All right then, verses 4 and 5 in Proverbs 13 talks about motivation. 4 and 5, the soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. 4 and 19, I'm sorry, and verse 19, the desire accomplished is sweet to the soul, but it is abomination to fools to depart from evil. Well, what I'd put it this way, that the way of the righteous, his motivation is inspired. He wants to please God. Therefore, he is operating by his will to do that which is pleasing to God. He makes his plans and he does his work. And he does it diligently, not because it's delightful, but because he is determined in his will, he's going to work, please God. The way of the wicked is he operates by instinct. How do I feel? Not inspiration from God, but instinct from his own feelings. If I feel like going out to the garden today, I will go. But if I don't, I won't. And so, of course, the opportunity slips by. In verse 19, the desire accomplished. I want to bring that word accomplished out, because that is the way of the righteous. not merely to desire the right thing, to be motivated and inspired, but to be faithful to it, to accomplish it. So that is another way. D, or four, is money. Always money seems to come up. And in verses 7 and 8, we have some reference to wealth. How does the righteous one, walking in the righteous way, handle wealth? There is that maketh himself rich, yet hath nothing, and there is that makes himself poor, yet hath great riches. And the ransom of a man's life are his riches, but the poor heareth not rebuke. Well, verse 8 is in reference to the fact that a very rich man has his own life endangered, whereas the poor man doesn't have to worry about his being kidnapped or anything like that, because, or even being robbed, as not as much, for he doesn't have as much for the wicked sinner to desire. But the point that we're making here really is a key here, that if we invest in the work of the Lord, we make more. Investing makes more. Giving versus hoarding, which is the way of the wicked, which actually decreases one's balance and yields less. Now, with Sally's permission, I thought I'd ask her, I didn't ask her before, but would you, Sally, just briefly mention, other than money, a pie situation you had?
Oh, yeah. I went to Margaret's house one day when she lived down Primrose, and I asked her some questions and whatnot. But anyway, as I was leaving, she said, I want you to take this home and have this as a little love gift from me. And when I got home, it was a beautiful, great pie. And so Bill had a piece, and I'd never tasted grape pie before. And he said, oh, Sally, you've got to have a piece of this. So I had a piece, and it was just scrumptious, you know. And it was, the grapes were in season, so Bill said, let's rush out. And we got a whole half a bushel basket of grapes. Came home, I made 12 pies, and I put them in the freezer, and I said, won't we have a marvelous time eating all these delicious pies ourselves, you know, all the rest of the year? And I was thinking, only of me. Now, there was the heart of giving, and here was the heart of selfishness. So we put those pies away, and I kept thinking, isn't that marvelous? I have these pies to eat and all this thing. And I forgot all about those pies. Refrigerator on the frost window, and I came home and I had to bake 12 pies and give them away.
That's the pie story. So the blessing of investing, you see, goes into all kinds of areas. And I thought for ladies, that might be a little more meaningful than banking business, especially today.
I got the comment over here with, I'm blessed, and I'm afraid not accepted in being able to share.
Yeah.
The story, that is, you know, because the blessing didn't come as richly as mine.
Well, please stop your machine and turn the tape over.